Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. NATO's Ukraine proxy war against Russia almost spiraled out of control after it was erroneously reported Russia fired a missile into Poland. The Zelensky regime and its many Western backers couldn't believe their good fortune. Finally, there was justification to start a hot war against Russia. Alas, cooler heads prevailed, at least for now. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Glenn Deason in Oslo. He's a professor at the University of Southeastern Norway, as well as author of the book, Great Power Politics in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George here. George, What a difference a week can make. We have this, I'm calling this program the Missile of November. You obviously understand the reference here, but it's nothing to take lightly, particularly since on this program, we have been predicting such a possible predicament would face the world. What do you make of all of it here? We had claims, counterclaims. Poland almost went to Article 4, which would be the step before Article 5. And then we had the Biden administration essentially just nip it in the bud in the very beginning. How do you account for all of these things that are playing out at the same time? Go ahead, George.
Well, I think it's been clear for quite some time that Ukraine's strategy has been to try to get the rest of the world involved in a war with Russia. And Ukraine has previously stated that NATO should bomb Russia, NATO should launch a preemptive nuclear attack on Russia. And then, lo and behold, we have this incident, which it was first reported that Russia had attacked Poland, a NATO power, and therefore Article 5 goes into immediate effect, all for one for all, and everybody's at war with Russia. And so when the true facts began to emerge fairly quickly, namely that this was the origin of this missile launch was Ukraine, clearly there was anxiety within Western capitals where it was going. But the most serious part of it, from at least from Ukraine's point of view, is that it was seen almost immediately that Ukraine was lying. And Ukraine had been lying for hours and hours and hours, that this was clearly a Russian attack. Now, it's obviously that there's actually rather more to it than that, because if one thinks about how anti-missiles would have been launched, it doesn't really make a great deal of sense that if, for instance, if Russia launches an attack from the east to the west or from the south to the north, why anti-missile missiles launched by Ukraine, which would be heading from west to east, would end up going in the other direction, namely going from east to west, and would end up in Poland. So the real question as to whether, in fact, the whole thing had been staged, a setup, a false flag attack, instigated by Ukraine, and possibly also with collusion by Poland. We don't know whether that's happened, but you have to think that within the capitals of NATO, and particularly in the United States, which would have to do all the heavy lifting in any armed confrontation, there was this very thought, hey, Ukraine has just staged a false flag attack trying to drag us into a nuclear war with Russia. So it's a very serious situation.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn, I don't know. I'm trying to look at it from a very practical point of view and not an ideological one. I think George is right. I think there could have been, we have no evidence here, we don't have any, but I think it makes logical sense that there could have been collusion between the governments of Poland and Ukraine to enlarge the war, have a hot war, because we're in a proxy war right now against Russia. But how would Ukraine and Poland actually benefit from a hot war with Russia. I don't understand that. I don't understand these countries that want to join NATO. Why are they putting a target on their back? Poland wants to be the hub of this proxy war against Russia, which we can, as we've seen, has its dangers involved here. I mean, I understand the visceral hatred of Russia and wanting to destroy it, but is it so pathological that they're willing to destroy themselves in the process? Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not sure about Poland's involvement.
This is pure speculation. Pure speculation. Yeah, yeah.
No, so for Ukraine, obviously they are in a hot war with Russia. So again, Zelensky has been very open that he would like to get more involvement from the West. Again, not really a conspiracy theory to point out that he wants NATO to intervene in this war on Ukraine's side. So this is kind of clear. To what extent Poland, within Europe, Poland obviously is a country that is most prepared to join in on this war against Russia. But whether or not this means that they were in on this, if you will, I wouldn't know. I would be more skeptical because I think this would very easily become a nuclear war. So I hope there's no one in Poland who would be cheering for this. But even within Ukraine, it's not completely sure to what extent this is what was known by Zelensky. Now, obviously, everyone has now recognized it was a Ukrainian missile. The main disagreement seems to be now, was it a missile that went astray trying to shoot down a Russian missile, or was this a deliberate attack? I mean, I think it was the mayor of Lublin in Poland who even questioned, like, what is going on here? You can't have an accidental shot if you fire a missile 100 kilometers in the wrong direction. So this indicates, he questioned whether or not, this putting all your chips in this fight is a good idea for Poland.
Well, Glenn, so, Ukraine does have a very tattered history of firing missiles in the wrong places and hitting the wrong things. There's a tradition here.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. It could have been accidental, or if it was deliberate trying to set off something, it could have been something low level, just the people firing off the missiles. I'm not sure how far up it would go. Again, it's not inconceivable, but that Zelensky would being kind of desperate now, would seek to do this deliberately to get NATO involved. So again, it becomes a lot of speculation now. Given that this was fired on Poland, it's interesting, because as I mentioned, Poland has been possibly the most possibly the only country who is considering joining in on this war. So it's all very unclear at this moment.
Because it's unclear, it's very, very dangerous here. George, we just heard from Glenn that, Zelensky's desperate. Okay, I'm willing to believe that. But Ukraine and its leadership, they're not victims here. They are volunteers. They are volunteers in this conflict. Okay, so you can't be desperate and a volunteer at the same time. They don't make any sense to me. And Ukraine would not be fighting today if it didn't have the backing of the United States. So this is what makes it into a very complicated thing, because, by this continued support here, of course the specter of nuclear a strike is on the table because of the continued support by NATO nations, particularly the United States, another $37 billion coming down the pipeway to what? To kill Russians. That's why it makes it so dangerous, George.
Yes, extremely dangerous. And as you say, to what end? Because Ukraine has no hope of defeating Russia. I mean, Ukraine's only possible way out of this is to provoke a war between NATO and Russia. That's its only hope. Because there's no way NATO...
So everyone loses, George? Is that their game?
Everyone loses, and that's what it is. It's a kind of a Götterdämmerung, a kind of total destruction that Ukraine is waging. And what's more, the United States knows this. So the United States knows that Ukraine cannot win this war, and that the only way Ukraine can prevail is by involving the United States in a shooting war with Russia. But the United States has been playing this game thinking, well, this is good for us as long as we're weakening and we're damaging Russia, as long as we're hurting Russia, destroying its economy, killing them, weakening them, then it's good for us, without thinking through as to the danger that the United States is courting. So for the Americans now to be upset with the Ukrainians, to the extent that they are upset, is thoroughly disingenuous. Yeah, this is exactly what was going to happen. That's Ukraine's strategy. There's no other strategy other than provoking a shooting war. Where is this going to go? Well, that seems to be the only way that it can be resolved, because neither the United States nor Ukraine nor anyone in NATO seems to have any idea of how to bring any of this to an end. Josep Borrell and NATO leaders say, well, it will be decided on the battlefield. Well, how's that going to be decided on the battlefield? I mean, either it will be total defeat for Ukraine and the complete destruction of its population, or NATO will be involved in a shooting war, which again, there's still quite a distinct possibility.
You know, Glenn, logic would dictate, okay, but you know, politics and logic don't always get along very well. Zelensky was very, obviously he was lying about his interpretation of what happened here. And that sends a chilling effect all through Europe, because that would be the extended battlefield. And of course, you know, the United States, you know, looking at its protege in Kiev, as just George has pointed out, is to lead everyone down to the path of destruction. It seems to me that we had CIA Director Burns meet with his Russian counterpart. I have to wonder if they just said, look, you guys are going to do what you're going to do, and we're going to do what we're going to do, but neither one of us are going to entertain ever, under any circumstances, nuclear weapons. Is that a sound theory?
Yes, I think so, because, again, this is what proxy wars are usually about. You fight with other people's armies. And I would ask your listeners if they should read a report directly from the United States, which is a RAND report from 2019. Now, this is a very well-known think tank, mainly because it has so close ties with the intelligence community in the United States. It's said that they have a hand in every war, you know, since World War II. But anyways, my point was that they outlined the strategy in 2019, how to weaken Russia, and Ukraine was a key component. They said, you know, keep threatening NATO expansion, give more weapons to Ukraine to hit Donbass, because the more we intensify it, the more Russia will be dragged in. And this would, bleed the Russians in terms of both money and people, because people are getting killed, but also it sucks a lot of resources, monetary resources out of Russia. But it has an additional benefit. That is that Ukraine is becoming molded as an anti-Russian country. Keep in mind, when they were offered NATO membership in 2008, there was only about 20 to 25% who actually wanted to be part of it. The majority had a negative view of NATO and a positive view of Russia. So having an anti-Russian Ukraine seemed like impossible. But now, after Russia's invasion, I think, there's going to be a very anti-Russian sentiment in Ukraine for decades to come, if not century. So,
all right, Glenn, I have to jump in here. I have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition to remind you we're discussing some real news. Okay, we're back from the break. Glenn, right before we went to the break, you wanted to finish off a point. Please go right ahead.
Yes, so my point was that the ambition was to have a slow-burning Afghanistan in Europe, if you will, to slowly bleed the Russians. But the same RAND report warned that if it intensifies too much, Russia begins to take territories in this this kind of development. That's not in America's interest. Also, obviously, a direct war between the United States and Russia is also not in the U.S. interest. So, and this is where we're heading now, because, this is the tail wagging the dog thing, where America might be dragged into a war which ends up in nuclear confrontation. This is not in the U.S. interest. So I think that this could have been a real mistake on the part of the Ukrainians, because now the Americans are very concerned that they might get pulled into a war like this. So
You know, George, on our podcast, The Gaggle, you've said it on a number of times, and you've been very critical in some respects of the special military operation, is that it's a conflict on the cheap. Well, it seems like the major powers are using Ukraine as a proxy on the cheap, and you can't do it forever, okay? Because number one, Ukraine is being grounded into dust, okay? It's electricity grid is failing. If not, it will be completely failed within a matter of weeks with winter here. And that's, you know, the U.S. sees the prospect of its proxy losing. On the other hand, you have the American proxy in Kyiv that is threatening nuclear Armageddon for us all. So there's a lot of miscalculation going on here. Does that account for, and I truly, gentlemen, don't have my head around who is really promoting negotiations? Milley, Sullivan, the Russians, the Zelensky? What's going on here, George? Can you make any sense of this all? Or is this just the fog of war and intentional disinformation, which comes with every conflict? Go ahead, George.
Well, I tend to think that there is intentional disinformation. I mean, obviously, there are concerns among the U.S. military who understand these things, that Ukraine cannot go on fighting this war forever, that the casualties that it has sustained are horrendous, that ultimately its infrastructure can be totally just destroyed to the point that there'll be no power at all, for the entire country. So I think that they probably do think it does, well, you know, maybe it's time for some sort of a ceasefire, a nice few months during which we can replenish the forces, revive, Ukraine's flagging fortunes, but without any sense of how you can bring this to an end, and, you know, that it's all, absurd. Russia isn't going to buy into any idea, well, let's just freeze everything in place for 3-4 months. And then allow the United States just to replace all of Ukraine's losses. So that isn't happening. But there's also, often happens with the United States, a kind of good cop, bad cop routine. We have Milley apparently, well, maybe we should negotiate. And then you have the hawks in the State Department. No, we have to head towards victory. So I think there's a lot of disinformation going on. I mean, the measure would be, is anyone coming up with any serious plan to negotiate over? You know, this would be the 3 or 4 points that we would accept, for a final settlement. I don't see anything like that. So I'm kind of skeptical about these stories about how America's pushing for some sort of negotiations.
Well, the two words, final settlement, that's the key, George. It's the key to all of this here, Glenn, because, you can talk about, a ceasefire, prisoner exchange, all these kind of things, but that has nothing to do with a final settlement. And I have been adamant since the start of the special military operation is that Russia embarked upon this military operation so it won't have to do it again in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. It wants a final settlement. And that's what the West is unable to comprehend or agree to, because it would mean losing. Okay. And that's something they can't contemplate at this point. But because they have their volunteer, not their victim, in Ukraine, this is the set of cards that they have. Go ahead.
Well, I think the problem now is that this has escalated so far out of control now. I mean, even NATO is recognizing that if Russia prevails, this is effectively a loss of NATO. And, the American military leaders are saying the same thing, that
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Glenn. I'm sorry, but they're the ones that are making that decision. They're saying, if we don't win, we will. See, that's very curious to me, okay? Because NATO could actually reinvent itself by saying, we actually are a defensive military, and we will not go forward with these military adventures in outer area and stuff like that. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, this what they're saying about themselves. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah,
sorry
no, to no, know, I agree with that. And I think that would be a healthy development for NATO as well, if they went back to the way they were during the Cold War, which was a status quo power, one which did not expand and one which did not intervene or attack other countries. So that could be a positive development. But my point was that NATO has kind of put its political legitimacy now on the line. So kind of everyone has seemingly everything to lose now, which is why it's so difficult for all the parts to step back, because again, what Russia wants as a political settlement is to address what wasn't addressed after the Cold War when NATO began to expand. It wants to have a European security architecture, which isn't based on the idea that stability derives from expanding the American military lines closer and closer to the Russian border. So they need a solution. They need a settlement to this. And I do agree. I don't think a temporary ceasefire while we work out the deal is possible, because again, as you pointed out, this will be seen as simply having a time to take a breath and rearm Ukraine in the meanwhile. So, and also they do remember the Minsk agreement from 2015. You know, President Poroshenko, he went out in the media and he said very openly, well, we were never planning to implement this peace agreement. We were just buying time to arm ourselves. As the Americans came in, they trained our troops, who built up, you know, from having nothing to one of the biggest armies in Europe. And you know, so this is, I guess, what the Russians would be afraid of. So I agree. I think if it's proposed a ceasefire, I don't think Russia would go along. But if they want a complete deal how to reorganize European security, I don't think NATO would go along, because that would diminish their role as the dominant force. So it's that's why this is so scary. There doesn't seem to be any way out of this.
Yeah, because George, this is a conflict that never should have happened. There were so many ways, so many off ramps. You and I talked about, all three of us talked about this for hours and hours. You know, there's still a way out. There's still a way out. And nonetheless, they decided to go down this path, and it was perfectly predictable, just as Glenn stated to all of us.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I think Glenn outlined it perfectly. Now, it really is. It's hard to see how there's any kind of a meeting point which isn't a total defeat for one side or the other. Because, as you said, for Russia to accept anything like Minsk III would be a complete defeat. I mean, you know, you've gone through this, you know, 9 months of war, these enormous casualties, just to go back to an agreement that we know the West has absolutely no intention of adhering to. You know, they'll sign, yeah, fine, you know, we'll have a new agreement, and then they'll break it immediately. I mean, we know this, they will immediately violate it. So, and that now NATO has drawn a line in the sand that sort of, that says, no, we have to win this, because if we don't, then, you know, this is a complete defeat for the West. So it's hard to see how there's any kind of a meeting
it's really disgraceful that NATO identifies itself as being synonymous with the West. It's not, okay? It's gruesome when you think about it, Glenn, because, and this is all about a country that is not even in NATO, and a country that has no national security vital interest to the West, but it does to Russia. This was imposed. Like I keep saying, and I know it's not popular, Ukraine volunteered for this. And as we're speaking right now, there are Ukrainian officials saying to Ukrainians, if you can leave the country, leave. Leave for the next 3 or 4 months, because it's going to be really bad here. Okay. This was all predictable, Glenn.
Yes, but even Ukraine is not one entity in this sense, because we say, well, why doesn't Zelensky sit down and talk? Obviously, if the lights are about to go off, you've got 500,000 Russian troops about to storm, this is the time to sit down. But coming to Zelensky's defense, if you will, well, if he would sit down now and negotiate with Russia, he doesn't have supreme control necessarily. Like, what would happen with much of the military who opposes him? Even Solution argued that he's not possibly in on this. And I would also point out that what happened in the beginning, because when Zelensky first was voted in, keep in mind, he won 73% of the votes on the peace platform. Now, you can go online and you can find all the videos. He went to the front line. He talked to the Azov and this right-wing battalion and said, listen, we agreed with the Russian, we'll pull back our heavy weapons. And they pretty much say to his face, no, that's not going to happen. We already sent you a letter. We will march on Kyiv if you try to impose a peace deal. Even his own advisor, Dmitry Yarosh, the leader of RightSec, he did an interview where he said Zelensky would hang in a tree in Kyiv, executed, that is, if he tries to implement his peace agreement. So it might be that this is still the case. So I don't think that he has this complete freedom and control over the Ukrainian army either.
Well, I mean, but George, this was perfectly predictable. The United States doesn't have co-equals in these conflicts. It has a supplicant, and they, well, again, they volunteered to be the proxy in all of this, and this is the outcome, because the U.S. will print money that doesn't have, but it can't print weapons, it can't print ammo, because that's where they are right now. The stockpiles are empty, and now this is what we have here. And then what about the oversight for all of this? I mean, this is all coming to a conclusion that was purely predictable, at least in my mind, and I think in yours.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Ukraine is a wholly owned subsidiary of the United States, and the United States continues with its disingenuous claims, saying, well, this war will go on as long as Ukraine wants it to go on. And, you know, we're leaving the final decision to Ukraine. So, you know, yes, we're completely bankrolling Ukraine. We're bankrupting ourselves by bankrolling it. We're pouring in everything we have from our armories into Ukraine. But the final decision is entirely with Ukraine, even though we know that the moment we cut off the arms spigot, Ukraine would just stop, wouldn't be able to continue for, you know, 1 second longer. But oh no, the final decision is with Ukraine. It's thoroughly disingenuous, but you know, the NATO countries, which are also complete supplicants of the United States, go along with this nonsensical story. And we had Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, was in Kiev the other day, spouting this absolute nonsense. Everything is really up to Ukraine. I mean, you know, we don't have any say in this. We're just doing whatever Ukraine wants.
Nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine. That's how we'll end the program here. I want to thank my guests in Oslo and Budapest. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, Crosstalk Rules.